What's up, y'all? I'm Will here with Schedule Fly, and this is the Restaurant Owners Uncorked podcast, one of the highest rated hospitality podcasts in the world, brought to you by us at Schedule Fly. We provide a very simple web-based restaurant employee scheduling software backed by legendary customer service. If you're on pencil and paper or Excel, or you're on some software with tons of bells and whistles and features you don't need or use, ScheduleFly is the perfect place for you. Easy to use, point, click, and go, and we'll take great care of you. ScheduleFly.com, free trial, check it out. Also, this podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Pop Menu and The Giving Kitchen and Kickfin, and you're going to hear about them in just a minute. First of all, let's talk about today's guest. Hey, what's up, y'all? This is a fun episode, a little bit different. This is John Giannani, and he owns Canteen Meats out in Petaluma, California. Really cool story. They do charcuterie, and they do freaking awesome charcuterie. And this is going to make you want some, but you can't get it unless you're in California. Great dude. He and his wife have a two-month-old. They just opened their retail shop. They sell to farmers markets. Really cool story. Incredible guy. It's going to make you want to move to Petaluma for sure. And just a fun guy to talk to. He just seems to have a lot figured out as a young man. And we're proud to serve him and proud to tell this story. Thank you all. Give your team the gift of Pop Menu AI Answering, a simple solution for phones ringing off the hook. AI Answering handles calls 24/7. 365 days a year, so your staff can focus on in-person guests. Customize your greetings and responses, answer common questions, promote specials and events, and send follow-up links to ordering and reservations. AI Answering handles it all while escalating more complex conversations back to your team. Never miss another tasty revenue opportunity. Pop Menu, the marketing technology platform designed to make growing your restaurant easy. Discover more AI restaurant tools that turn your to-do list into an already done list by requesting a demo today. For a limited time, get $100 off your first month, plus lock in one unchanging monthly rate at popmenu.com. Go now to get $100 off your first month at popmenu.com. Be sure to tell them that Will from Restaurant Owners Uncorked podcast and Schedule Fly sent you. Y'all, this is a great business. I just told you what they like me to say. I will say that we have a lot of mutual customers at Schedule Fly with Pop Menu. They all agree. Great product, great customer service, great results. Check them out, popmenu.com. This episode is also brought to you by The Giving Kitchen. Giving Kitchen provides emergency assistance for food service workers through financial support and a network of community resources. Since its inception in 2013, Giving Kitchen has served over 15,000 food service workers and awarded over $10.5 million to food service workers in crisis. If you or someone you know is a food service worker in crisis, please ask for help. TheGivingKitchen.org. And again, that's TheGivingKitchen.org. Y'all, this is a phenomenal organization. Jen, the founder, has been on this podcast. Jen Heidinger Kendrick, check out that episode to hear their full story. But if you know somebody or you need help, go to thegivingkitchen.org. Incredible, incredible organization and very responsive and has a wonderful mission. Check them out. All right. We're recording. Man, from all the way across the country. Hey, John, introduce yourself real quick.
Stoked to be here. My name's John Giannani, owner, operator of Canteen Meats. We got some prosciutto behind me aging. We got a small little facility here in Petaluma, California, where we make everything. We just opened up shop for retail, but we sell at farmers markets. And I must have about three Schedule Fly usernames. I've been using you guys at pretty much every spot I've been at. So,
yeah. Oh, nice, man. You the man. We appreciate that. Hey, listen, that's how we've grown. It's been, we only have this small team of five, so we just don't have the advertising and marketing and integrations and all this other stuff. So it's word of mouth, man. It's people taking us from one place to the next or telling other people about it. So, well, thank you, dude. I read your story. I emailed you a few months ago. I think you sent us your logo or something like that. When we get a logo request or just customer support stuff, I like to go in and just see like, okay, well, what's this place all about? And that's how we find people for this podcast. And I read your story. I was like, oh, this is cool. I hope I can get him on the podcast because this is a really cool story. Is it, like, I just love what I was reading. So we'll talk about that whole thing today. But and then since then, you guys, like, you opened your retail store and then you had your first
baby.
You have your son. How's your son doing?
He's awesome. Yeah. Just pounding leche nonstop. Look over in the middle of the night. He's got his hand out of the swaddle. I'm calling him Leche Guevara. it's fun. And then I can bring him into the shop on days when it's not like heavy cut days or there's, you know, a bunch of hogs coming in. If it's just like a computer day, I'll bring him in here with me. And so he just kick back and be nice to kind of like raise him in this
Heck
spot.
Yeah, Will. What's his name?
Lorenzo Giannani.
So, yeah. And he's like, he's like a month old, right? Two months.
Growing. But yeah, that's another thing that's been cool too, balancing that and having the flexibility to kind of duck out of the shop. We live a mile away, so I'll just pop home, check in with him, get some smiles, come back. Just like you guys got five people. We're the same way. We got four people. Small team. Most of us are all, everybody's part-time. I got one full-time staff member. He does all the raw production with me. He's been with me for about 3 years. Everybody who works farmers markets for us, it's all people who kind of, they've got full-time gigs, and some of them are friends. It ends up being kind of like a fun thing for them to do on weekends. But even if they're just with us one day, it's all a tight crew.
Yeah, man.
Friends, family.
Well, let's talk about your story. Because y'all, so this is, when I say y'all, you and your bride, you had careers in, well, one of you had, was it retail and hospitality, right? Tell me the backstory around all this.
Aaron's got a design background, my wife. She's got a really good eye. She's always had a good eye for, also has a good operations mindset on like how to do things efficiently. Me, I've always worked in wine or food, whether it's at wineries, managing restaurants, selling wine. In 2014, we had been dating for like a year, and I just had it in my head. I was like, I want to go to Europe. I want to travel. I want to get out of here. I want to see some spots. And mainly I want to learn how to make charcuterie. And so I asked her, I was like, do you want to come with me on this trip? Like, we can go everywhere. And she's like, yeah, I'm down. And so literally the next day I started looking up the tickets. She's like, whoa, take it easy. Like, chill out. I got a full-time job. You got a full-time job. We ended up planning it out to a T, and it took us an entire year from that date that we talked about it until we left. I did did right by my bosses at the time, gave them like 8 months notice. Everybody knew that we were going to be doing this thing. And so we, through a website called workaway.info, got linked up. You're basically applying to jobs, right? Worldwide. It's people like me, like us, small business owners, but just in different countries that need help, right? A lot of them had families. And so we basically applied to jobs. Most of them were all pig farms, with the intention of learning how to make charcuterie. It's my favorite food. And working in restaurants at the time, I was realizing that a lot of people were spending a lot of money on charcuterie boards. And it was just like an exciting time for chefs in America. And that was one of the things that I wanted to kind of hone in on. And so we started in Sweden and worked at a farm there, raising a rare native breed of pig called the Lindrotsvin. And so we fed the pigs, butchered the pigs, made the charcuterie, but then also we would just hang out with people from around the world, because at any one of these spots, there could be somebody from Austria, a couple from Japan, a couple from Italy. Like, there was just all sorts of people there. Some places we stayed in a basement, some places in a room. In this pig farm in France, we stayed in a tent. And there was a thunderstorm. It was awesome. Memorable. But a lot of, relations were made, and a lot of just learned all kinds of techniques, but then also kind of learned how each family or couple managed a small business with all of its challenges. But in the same way, like, we were able to travel around, but in the same way we're like kind of going on a hike is fun, but going on a hike like looking for mushrooms is more fun, or going out hunting or fishing is more fun than just walking for the sake of walking. And so in the same way, we were traveling, but we had a focus where I was like, we're learning how to make cured meats. And so that was the kind of revolved all around that. We did that for 9 months, which was way longer than we intended. And it was probably the coolest thing we've ever done. And then came back stateside and, got a job cutting meat in south of Market in the city from a guy I used to buy meat from. I just hit him up, said, "Hey, Mike, it's John. Let me get a job." And so started cutting meat, did that for about a year. On the weekends, I was pouring wine at this really cool tasting room in Sonoma, Scribe Winery. And then eventually started working at a salumi facility in Cloverdale, northern wine country. We're making, 2,000, 5,000 pound batches of salami. And same thing, I was pouring wine on weekends. And then eventually rented my own commercial kitchen space, like many people start, it's a shared space. It's a good way to crack in, low overhead. You don't have to pay for utilities, minimal rent. There's four or five different businesses using it. We got our own, space and time to come in. That's how I started, and then started working at farmers markets, selling at farmers markets. And even to this day, farmers markets are our main sales outlet. So we do five a week, and it's been awesome not only to get that like real-time customer feedback and see, what people are looking to get into, but we're able to stay small and still grow because we're just direct to consumer. Our license only allows us to sell DTC in the state of California. So just doing more farmers markets is one of the ways that we're able to kind of slowly grow the brand.
Let me ask you this, man. How did your whole hospitality journey start? When and why did you get started in this wonderful world of hospitality?
Kind of by accident. After in 2010, I worked the harvest for Martinelli Winery up in Sonoma, Windsor, really. Was the vineyard sampler, and then we'd work in the cellar afterwards, doing barrel operations, whatnot. Finished that, and then I started selling wine. I was working for an importer selling French, Italian, Austrian wines, mainly Italian. And then opening up accounts, all around the Bay Area. It was young, hungry. It was mainly commission-based, so just hitting a lot of pavement, taking a lot of no's, but doing, pretty well. Ended up getting this one account, this Italian restaurant. The owner was a Sicilian guy, and he said, "Hey, John, I need a somm on weekends. I'll still buy your wine. You can sell your wine that you sell me, but like directly to the customers." And I didn't have any somm certification at the time. I knew, a good amount about wine, of course, but that's how I got started. Started working as a somm at his spot. And then about a few months later, he asked me to manage a restaurant that he had that was also a hotel, bar, charming spot built in 1901, like old style saloon place in Half Moon Bay that people literally used to like ride their horses up to and get a drink. Cool spot. So I managed that for a year. It was a little bit divey. It had its, quirks, paper thin walls. People would, rent some rooms, and it was just a full bar up until 2 a.m. The walls. Cool spot though. Learned a lot there. And then from there, went to a different restaurant where I really cut my chops, learned a whole lot. It was a classic diner spot, still is. That place is just doing very well. The owners are the best. Andy and Jamie, Alice's restaurant, if you guys are listening.
Wait, Alice's restaurant?
Yeah.
Where is it?
It's in Woodside. It's not the one from the Arlo Guthrie song. Okay. I don't even know if that one's up and running anymore. But now this is a cool spot, though. It's like perched on the top of, you know, you're in the Bay Area, you want to get to the coast. There's like one mountain pass. Basically, you go through tons of redwood trees all around. Feels like you're in a different time. Real cool spot.
Okay.
And then after that was the Europe travel.
Okay.
And then, from there onward.
So tell me about charcuterie. What you said it's your favorite thing. Like, how did that, was that at the Sicilian place or where did you?
No, I mean, my family, we're very much American, right? But we've got Italian heritage. And it's just always been my favorite food, whether it's something simple when I was a little kid, just salami sandwiches. We ate a lot of, Columbus salami, great stuff. They've since grown a lot. Now, I mean, my favorite food, if I were to pick one, would be a jamón ibérico aged, you know, roughly 3 years. It's
3 years.
Got everything, right? Just packed mommy. I wanted to learn how to make that, being, you know, all around my favorite food. The first thing I was like, I just want to learn how to make it for myself and, you know, maybe not have to buy it.
Right. It's not cheap. Yeah.
Spending a lot of money on charcuterie. Yeah. And once you start making it, you realize why it's not cheap, right? Like, not only does it take so long to make, but then throughout the process, you are losing weight, right? Except for some items like mortadella. But like, you know, you generally lose about 30, sometimes 40% of the original weight. So you got to kind of like figure out your pricing structure. And a lot of it's just based on what other people are doing. And then, you know, how much your meat costs that you're using. You know, we use all vendors that sell at the farmers markets with us. It's not cheap meat, you know, but that expensive meat, when it's raw, becomes even more expensive when you dry it and then age it. But there's so many reasons why I got into it, but I just couldn't ever get the thought out of my head that I wanted to have a company where we aged meats. Just like aging wine, things like these hanging behind me right here, just the fact that it's something that gets better with time.
You mentioned one aged 3 years. How long do you typically age charcuterie? I mean, does it vary from months to years or?
That big one is going to its 3 year birthday on May 10th. We're cracking that. That's from some California raised Iberico pigs from Encina Farms up in Middletown. But usually things like Copa, you know, diameter about like size of a softball starting out. That'll take around 3, sometimes 4 months. Salami is generally faster. Those would be like a month and change, 2 months if it's a bigger diameter. But our prosciutto legs are like classic prosciutto we make. We do 15 months. So it all runs, you know, and there's no real like algorithm. I don't have some overarching, you know, spreadsheet of I need to make this now in order for it to be ready. You think you kind of have a hold on it, but we generally just try to make as much as we can with the time that we got while maintaining quality. And you can only grow so fast. You know, it's always a very, very slow growth as things age. It's not like a bakery where you can scale in a heartbeat. You know, maybe if you had a whole lot of investment money, you could scale. But we've been growing very slowly over the past 4 years, and I'm happy with that. You know, we don't have any debt. We don't have any investors. You know, I had a loan that I got from QuickBooks. And other than that, it's just been paying as we go, and you kind of just make moves as your bank account tells you it's okay to, you know.
Smart way to run a business, man. Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know a ton about charcuterie. I mean, I like it. I eat it when I see it. When somebody has a charcuterie board, I'll dive in and I'm all over it. I eat a ton of meat just generally, and cheese. So you mentioned being on pig farms. You mentioned just now, you know, buying hogs. Is it, do you also have other animals that you?
Yeah. We do beef. We don't do like, we don't get, you know, whole sides of beef. We don't have the space for that. And we only have a handful of beef products. So I'll buy rounds. Mm-hmm. Most people, they don't have any trouble whatsoever selling their ribeyes, selling their New Yorks. What they do have more of a trouble selling generally are, you know, higher round, top round, bottom round, you know, those leaner, tougher cuts generally. But that's what we use when we make our essentially beef prosciutto, which is the beef brisala, or beef cecina, the Spanish version of that, where we cold smoke it with hickory prior to aging it. So we also do lamb. We make a lamb salami. We also do duck, but pork is the main thing. That's the main thing.
Why is that? Yeah.
It's got the most fat. It's got the it's also the perfect, you know, example of a whole animal butchery. You can utilize everything from the snout to the tail. Literally, we'll do our family meal with ears. And my main guy, who he's been with me for 3 years, he's the best. He's from Haiti, and his favorite dish, like if you had to have him pick any part of the animal to eat, he's like, the trotters and the ears, those are the best. And so once a week he cooks up a family meal for us, and it's the tastiest thing ever. Usually the trotters don't even make it to customers, we eat those ourselves. But the pork, not only the fat, because you do need fat for a lot of the products, but it's also it generally is quicker to harvest. But fat, flavor. If I had to pick one protein to eat for the rest of my life, it would be pork for its versatility. You can have it for, you know, any meal, any time of day, and multiple different applications.
Sold, man. I like it. Okay. So then you're buying, so you're buying from local Petaluma. You're like north of San Francisco, right?
Yeah. We're in the North Bay. It's also the closest wine grown region to San Francisco. Recently it's gotten more popular for Pinot Noir grapes. Petaluma Wind Gap is great for that, but also just rolling pasture. If you come out here, there's just everywhere you look, there's something's grazing. Right. Usually cattle. There's a lot of poultry here as well. Chicken. We get our duck from Liberty Farms. They're here in Petaluma as well. But it's pretty well suited to agriculture. And it's a beautiful area. I feel like people ask me about Petaluma. I feel like I could do an infomercial on Petaluma. It's got a lot going on. There's tons of restaurants popping up here too. People are great. If you want to have some city 50 minutes away, have at it. But I mean, you don't really need to leave here too often. There's a lot of life. Thick. Food's amazing. But pigs, most people, unfortunately, don't want to have pigs as neighbors. One or two, that's fine. But like, you know, if you're talking a proper hog operation, you're going to need generally a little bit more land to do that, spread them out. They can be pretty rough on the land, so you got to rotate them. But there's a lot of people here that are doing an incredible job with them, raising heritage breeds. And we've got tomorrow coming in two pigs from Napaluma Farms. They're great. They're in Petaluma. And then the next day we have a hog coming in from Pajaro Pastures they're actually in Corralitos, kind of down by Santa Cruz, but they get their hogs processed in Petaluma. It used to be that there was no abattoirs, slaughterhouses, for, you know, like 3 hours, right? People would have to drive their livestock 3 hours to Orland. But now there's all kinds of mobile units, which is really cool, very sustainable. Anything you can do to make it easier on the animals, the ranchers, and also lower the carbon footprint, these mobile units are filling that void. And they're basically mobile in quotations. It's a stationary unit, but that's how you get it licensed. And so these animals, they're raised in 10 minutes drive, they're processed, and then another 10 minutes drive, they're brought to me.
How long do the animals, how old are they when they're processed?
Minimum 8 months usually.
Okay.
The longer they go, the more muscle structure you get, the more integrated fat you get, the darker the meat color. Most of the animals that I get are going to be raised much, taken to slaughter much later than that. The meat will look like beef sometimes. Like if you take a cut from the shoulder, it's the meat's red, right?
Okay.
It's not this like bland, you know, peach color, which nothing wrong with that. There's a need for that in all kinds of different markets. But we find that what our customers like the most and what we find to be the most flavorful is, you know, a little bit later in the age game. And you just get that deep, dark red hue to it.
All right, y'all. It is time for a little mid-episode break. We're going to talk about kickfin. Thousands of restaurants, bars, and breweries use kickfin to tip out their employees instantly. No cash required. With kickfin, tips go directly to your employee's bank of choice the second their shift ends. It's a really simple solution to a really big problem because if you're still paying out credit card tips in cash, it's costing you. Time-consuming bank runs and cash counting take managers away from work that matters. Cash is hard to track, which leads to accounting headaches, and it creates the perfect opportunity for theft, human error, and compliance issues. Bottom line, there's never been an instant secure way to pay out tips until kickfin. It's an easy-to-use software that sends real-time, cashless tip payouts straight to your employees' bank accounts, 24/7, 365. Kickfin gives managers hours back in their day, makes reporting a breeze, and protects your business from risk. Most importantly, employees love it. Restaurants can have Kickfin up and running overnight. Employees can enroll in seconds. No hardware, no contracts, no setup fees. Visit kickfin.com for a personalized demo. See how restaurants across the country are digitizing tips with Kickfin. All right, that's what they asked me to say, so I say it, and it tells the story very well, but I like to add this in. We referred a customer that we know and love very well, SupDogs, to Kickfin. SupDogs has been a customer for a super long time. Trust them very much with their opinion on these types of tools. They started using Kickfin. I asked Brett, the owner, recently how it's going. He said, Kickfin is perfect. It's going great. Exactly what we were hoping for. So there you go. Kickfin.com, y'all. Check them out. I'm so fascinated with this. So like when you say you've got to have a little bit more land, and you know, like how many acres are these farms typically?
I don't know what the regulations are. There's definitely numbers that ranchers have to adhere to, which me not being a rancher, I do not know those. But just from an objective or subjective observation, you know, pigs can be a little noisy.
Yeah.
If not maintained, you know, they could be a little smelly, just like cows can, right? So you want to spread them out, give them room to roam. And that's what the people that we buy from do.
How many will you go through in a year?
Oh, gosh. I couldn't call it. We try to do a pig minimum every other week. That means that sometimes there will be weeks that we don't get any raw meat in. That's fine. That's a nice little break for not only my bank account, but also it just allows us to catch up on other things. We call those RTE days, ready to eat days. When everybody comes in, there's two color coats that you can rock. There's a white smock and then a blue one. If you're wearing whites, you're touching raw meat. And if you're wearing blues and you're touching RTE meat. So on those RTE days, we're pulling down things like what you see behind me, whole pieces of copa, whole pieces of prosciutto. We're portioning them, we're packing them. Usually we're slicing them and packaging them. Everything that we do is by hand, very labor intensive. Although the people that we have doing them are very good at doing it now. I'm always shocked at how much they can turn out. They're way better at it than me now. I mean, I started doing it just myself on a tiny little vacuum sealer. And now we've got, you know, as you go, you upgrade equipment, which can be an addiction in and of itself, right? Or if I can get this next piece of equipment, and then if I get that, then I'll, you know, upgrade to this level. We're at a good point right now where I don't think I need to buy too much more. It's all very simple, rudimentary things we have. We have a meat slicer. We have a hand crank sausage stuffer. We got a meat grinder, a buffalo chopper, and we got a vacuum sealer. Other than that, a lot of refrigeration, freezer space. And then we got our two aging rooms, which are kind of behind me, but behind those doors, there's one aging room for the whole muscle stuff, which is the things that are not ground up, like your Copa, like your prosciutto. And then we have another room for our salami, which are, you know, salamis ground up just like sausage. We mix it up. But then instead of sausage, like, you just sell it right then and there. We tie them up, we ferment them, hang them to ferment, and then we dry them. So the two rooms are separated like that. And then this whole front display is the where they kind of finish at a ambient room temperature. I don't know if you've ever cut into a piece of meat, aged meat, or even cheese. You can get them, those little crystals. Mm-hmm. Called tyrosine crystals, and it's a breakdown of amino acids that basically ends up being the building blocks of MSG, natural MSG, which is one of the reasons why it's all so tasty. And so that only happens past a certain amount of aging, and you have to, you know, do everything, of course, at a certain temperature and humidity. If you do it right, then it's just laced with those beautiful little crystals.
Well, so labor intensive. Tell me about the labor part of this, and is that, are you able to find and keep good people? It seems to be challenging for a lot of folks these days.
A lot of people, yeah. That's another thing too. I mean, I pay my staff well, and we're all friends. We're all Spanish speaking. When we're working, we're speaking Spanish, nothing else. I got an amazing crew. It's just three people who are helping out in production, and I haven't had a single issue with any of them, and I'm really lucky in that sense. I take care of them, they take care of me. Shoot, they threw us a surprise baby shower. You know, showed up to work one day, and they had a cake and candles and all kinds of like bags and gifts.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Just, you know, touches you in a way that, you know, you feel like a family kind of, you know. Yeah. And then with farmers markets, I would say is the toughest thing to staff, because you are asking a lot out of people. In some cases, you're asking them to use their own phone for checkout. In many ways, they're using their own car to transport things. We do have a company van, but sometimes you got to get a little creative if you're doing multiple markets in a day. Like I said, a lot of the people work in the markets. They're, you know, friends of ours, or sometimes even family. My sister-in-law works them. She's just got done with school, and she's like, John, I'm broke. And she's like, I also want to hang out with Lorenzo, her, you know, nephew. And I was like, I got an idea. We work in farmers markets now. She'll stay with us in Petaluma. But yeah, that market is the markets are tough to find real good, dependable people. Because the Bay Area is expensive too. I mean, cost.
What's your reach? Like, how many, like, when you have farmers markets, like, is it what's the geographic reach?
Yeah, it's a good question. We don't go further yet than San Francisco. And we try to centralize our markets around the city and Marin as well. For the people not from the Bay Area or not familiar, Marin and San Francisco are both really nice areas, both very expensive areas. And we've found that the general consumer there really knows their food. There's not that much hand-holding that has to be done, although there is some education that, you know, you need to, you know, a lot of people don't know what half of the products that we make are, which is fun too, in a way, to teach people a new thing, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of people, they'll just pop into the booth like, oh, you got guanciale, like, awesome, like, let me get two of those, I'll see you next week. And so there's a lot of people that really know their food. We found that those ones are the most worthwhile for us in Marin and in the city. Down the road, I'd like to do more. My nephew, he's 12 right now, and I'm like, two more years, dude.
Well, so if you're, but that's like an hour away, right? Some of the farmers markets?
It is. Yeah. So it ends up being a bit of a hike. And so you got to kind of quarterback who's working what. Some people who work the markets live an hour and a half away from where their, you know, market's going to be. Ends up being a long day. There's some overtime. There's some meal break penalties that you end up paying. There's like, you know, so you got to figure out if it's even worth it to pay somebody. Like, I'm going to start getting back to work and work on a market a week. One or two markets a week is my like comfortable amount where it's still real fun. You walk in there and it's just, you know, everybody, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, cheers. Everybody's like, hey, how's it going? And you work on a barter system, right? Like, I haven't gone to the grocery store in years for anything that's not like toilet paper or, you know, soap, which we're making our own lard soap now.
Are you really?
Yeah. Stoked for that. That's one thing with pigs. You end up with a lot of, there's a lot of excess fat. And with that excess fat, you can do a lot of things. One of which is render it down into cooking lard. Mm-hmm. We started making, you know, lard pie crust that we were selling over the holidays, which was awesome. But then, yeah, another thing, lard soap. Still got that glycerin in it, very moisturizing. So pumped to start having that too. What were we saying? The farmers markets.
Well, I was just curious. You answered it though. It's just trying to figure out how to, you know, the like getting your meat there and getting people there and all that comes with it. But that's fascinating to me. So you've been able to barter enough where you're not buying stuff in the store.
Most of the farmers that go there, I mean, they're bringing perishables, right? So they're bringing things like lettuce, microgreens, broccoli, this, that, you name it. Most of the products that we make are non-perishable. So we are fortunate that we don't have that issue. Once we make, once it's finished, it's pretty bulletproof at that point. We still store it all refrigerated. We still bring everything to the market in coolers, but it's shelf stable. It's meant to last. And so the folks that bring, like, let's say lettuces or, you know, different veggies, broccoli, what have you, we'll trade them a salami and they have a case of what have you. And all of a sudden they're just giving things away because it's just going to go bad otherwise, you know? So we make it, you know, worth their time. We'll give them their money's worth in meats. Everybody's happy. They spread our brand and we spread theirs and we eat really well.
I bet you do, man. That's freaking awesome. Well, so you, if I remember correctly, cause I tried, I think I went on your site and I was like, and there's a shop link. I was like, oh, well, you can't get it out of California right now though, right?
Yeah. So it's a licensing thing, which, you know, I used to work at those bigger USDA plants.
Yeah.
And that's what we would need to do in order to A, wholesale and B, sell across state lines. It sounds like some big thing, but it's not that big. We wouldn't change our process at all. The thing that would change is we would have to make some minor tweaks to the facility. Our like cute, charming little shop right here would have to become a little bit more sterile with some partitions. You have to have what's called a proper flow chart where raw meat enters in one way and the RTE meat exits the other way and they never intersect, right?
Okay.
So we have things divvied up right now. One side's this, the other side's that. You're rocking blues, you're rocking whites. And that works for our CDFA license. It's actually going way above and beyond for our CDFA license. But if we ever did want to wholesale, which to be honest, I'm not even sure I really want to do. Once you get to that level, you have to kind of go through some different supply chains and, you know, we wouldn't be able to work with some of the same ranchers in the same capacity that we are. Things would change, some for the better, some not. Maybe down the road. But if that happened, it would maybe be something where I keep this shop, which I love, right next to home. And then if we ever did want to grow, let's say if somebody said, hey, John, I'd like to invest. Here's $2 million. Then maybe we just open up a different production facility where we then do our USDA production.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, if you can keep doing it without that investor and all that comes with that, then go for it, man. It's, you know, like
there's a lot of people in California. There's a lot of people in the Bay Area. And the way, that, like I said, that we can grow is by A, doing more farmers markets. And then also doing kind of, you know, creative things. Like we just did another big expense. I just got a vending machine. So there's this really cool airport. It's the Sonoma County Airport in Santa Rosa. It's my favorite airport to fly out. If you're ever on the West Coast, this place goes all over, and it's like a bus stop, right? You show up, you can show up 20 minutes before your flight. Everybody that works there, nice. And then you can get great flights all over the West Coast. But there's no food there. And so we got a vending machine, us and one other company, Cousteau. It's a French bakery. You pass security, and then we'll have that bakery vending machine, and then we'll have ours, Canteen Meats. And so people from all over the world really will be able to, let's say if they're flying through this airport or have a layover somewhere, they could grab a snack for themselves or something from Sonoma County to take home with them. And the shelf stable too, so they can fly with it. So that's another exciting little sales outlet that we got
cooking. That's really cool, man. Congratulations. That's a neat way to, that's creative. I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. We'll see. I'm hoping it goes well, but I mean, even if it doesn't, I got a vending machine. Put it anywhere.
Nah, I think that'll go great. That's a cool use of a vending machine. I mean, God, we need more of that, bro. We need more of that and not like, you know, freaking crap you normally get in a vending machine. Like,
we were flying out of there, and for such a cool, charming, like unique airport, all they had was a vending machine with like chips and pretzels, which, I mean, there's a time and place for those. But it was, after that, I just cold called them. Was like trying to get in touch with whoever handles the food there. And they said, you called it a great time. We're actually about to release a bid, you know, join the county website. You can submit a bid. And took about 10 months until it all went through. But now it's finally gone through. Got the insurance. Everything's finally locked in.
I think you've just created a new category, man.
Anybody about it. There's
we need prosciutto vending machine. Like this is what, like, that's amazing. I mean,
I definitely didn't invent it. There's somebody else out there who's done it. And of course, Japan, they got like sushi vending machines.
Do they really? Okay.
Oh, the Japanese are wild. They got it all.
I mean, I haven't used a vending machine forever for that reason. But I really try to stick with, like, you know, I'm 49 now. I've learned, like, my body operates well on whole foods, like real food. And so meat and cheese are a big part of my diet. It's hard to find that. Like, you know, there's meat, cheese, and eggs. Like, there are some gas stations around here in the Southeast now, like, that are, like, have a lot of variety, and you can find that stuff when you're traveling. But I can't remember the last time I used a vending machine, because it's always just, you know, like,
yeah, maybe get a drink or overpriced water or something like that. You know?
Yeah, exactly, man. I love this. Good. You got a 2 month old, you got a growing business. Do you ever have time for yourself?
Oh yeah. I mean, even now, like, we're social sometimes to a fault. I mean, 2 days ago, we went to my buddy's 2-year-old birthday, and it was just like a toddler convention. I've never seen so many kids. The kids were great with my 2-month-old though. All our friends are kind of having kids at the same time, which is awesome. It was one of those things where they had their kids and like, hey John, like, come on man, join us, it's fun. So I did join them. Yesterday we had, you know, friends come over in the morning, friends come over in the afternoon. So at any point in time, we try to get out. We took Lorenzo up to the Sierras last week just for, you know, a couple of days. If I'm not out, you know, catching some fresh air, I can feel pent up. So I'm always trying to go out. I don't work out in a gym per se, which I probably should. I should probably start that. But all my hobbies tend to lean towards very physical. You know, we'll go on backpacking trips, whether it's fly fishing, hunting. I help my buddies up in Oregon guide his elk hunts. I'm not the guide, but I'm the camp chef, and I'll just like schlep around the meat for the paying hunters.
There we go.
I'm stoked to bring Lorenzo on to some of those once he's of age, you know, get him out and about.
You don't need to go to the gym, man. If you're doing that stuff, just keep doing what you're doing. That's all you just need to do something physical and outside. The outside part's huge. So, yeah. I mean, better to be out doing that.
If I enjoy it, like I said earlier, like hiking's all fun and games, but like hiking with a purpose, like that's what gets me going. So, I mean, the more hobbies I can kind of wrap into a day and also mix in friends with that, the better. But it can be hard, and I find it being a lot harder with, you know, a 2-month-old. Yeah. Right now, he doesn't have any say. I can just take him wherever, right? He's putting up much of a fight. But the one saving grace of having my own business has been the flexibility to duck out in the middle of the day and go spend whatever, even if it's half an hour for lunch, just pop in, catch a couple smiles, and then come back in here, you know. So like Monday today, we're off. We're not in production Monday. We do Tuesday through Saturday. And so this is usually like my day to kind of, I'll pop into the shop, check on things, clean things up, do a little bit of computer work, and then just spend some time with Lorenzo.
Nice, man. Good. You got a good formula figured out, brother. Stick with it. Keep doing what you're doing. You got a good balance, absolutely.
You got 2 or 3 under your wing?
3, man. But mine are. I'm certainly beyond cool for them. I can take any time I can get with them now. I mean, my daughter's 20 and she's a sophomore in college, and then my sons are 17. He's a junior and 14 in 8th grade. So. It gets, the dynamic changes as they get a little older. It's used to be like now I'll take any time I can get with him, particularly my 17-year-old. You know, he's got a girlfriend, he's got a car.
You're done. He's out.
So anything I can do. We were actually just talking about trying to go out. I like to ski. So we try to, I mean, we have some quote mountains here in North Carolina, but this is where we grew up skiing, but I try to go out west. I haven't been to, I really want to go to, I always wanted to go to Squaw Valley. And I think they changed the name recently, but,
Palisades.
Palisades. Yeah. I haven't been to that area yet. I've been to Utah, been to Colorado, been to Wyoming, but, I know that's not super close to you, but that general area is beautiful.
Tahoe.
And yeah, I'd love
Tahoe
to be in Tahoe.
Want a little like Tahoe Junior. We go to Bear Valley most of the time. Probably shouldn't be airing that out. But
where
it's
is Bear Valley?
Yeah. It's about, you know, an hour and a half south of Tahoe. It's kind of in between Tahoe and Yosemite.
Okay.
It's actually the closest mountain to the Bay Area. Not a lot of people go there. It's just like a tiny little, there's one road going through it, Highway 4. It can only grow so much.
Yeah.
So it keeps it, you know, a little more quaint. It's kind of stuck in the 90s a little bit too, which I kind of dig. It's got that.
I kind of dig that very much, man. I love that.
And it's a fun spot. And it's ski on, ski off. I mean, if you're going there halfway through the day, your legs are like linguine. You're like, there's no break. There's no lines. I dig that spot.
No, that's my kind of place. The problem with going, you know, the well-known places is that they're crowded and they're expensive. And like, I can't stand going skiing and going in, and it looks like you're going into like a, you know, like a 5-star country club just to eat lunch when you're skiing. You don't need this. I asked about
a glizzy, a hot dog, and get back in.
You're good. That's right. Yeah, man. Actually, I would just go to a vending machine and buy a bunch of your meat that's all I need to kind of keep me fueled. I asked about that because I've been in North Carolina my whole life, except for 2 years. I lived in Burbank. And there was a place called Big Bear, I think. So I was it's Big Bear Mountain, which
yeah,
was like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So Bear Valley. All right, we'll have to check that out.
Yeah, Big Bear is like Southern California's ski place, which, to be honest, I've actually never I've never been to it. I heard great things, but it's basically kind of like SoCal's version of Tahoe or what have you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So Bear, okay, well. Well, hopefully I'll get out there one day. I'd love to get, I mean, you kind of sold me on Petaluma. It sounds like a freaking awesome place to go. I'm not as much for the big cities all the time, but like a place like that sounds like easy access to a lot of beautiful stuff, but kind of a slower pace and just good people. Yeah, and
there's a good mix. I mean, it's pretty diverse, right? I mean, you could go up into a bar and to your right, there could be some third generation rancher. And then to your left is, you know, some punk rocker who's about to play a show, and you know, it's just there's a little bit of everything, and everybody's into food, and everybody's pretty proud of Petaluma. It's like there's a lot going on here to be proud of, so we dig it.
You got it going on, my friend. Well, look, I appreciate the time, appreciate the story, glad to get to meet you. Thank you for the business. I mean, this is fun, man. I really enjoy doing this.
Yeah. Well, cheers. Thanks for having us on. I'll stay tuned for your next episodes.
Lots of them coming up, man. I look forward to posting this. I appreciate you, John. Have a good one, man.
All right. Later.
See ya. Hey, y'all. Before you dial out, just a quick request. If you are listening to this podcast on iTunes, if you would give us a star rating and a comment, it would be so helpful. If you're on Spotify, if you'd follow us or whatever platform you're on, if there's a rating or a follow, please do that. What that does is it tells these algorithms to put this content in front of more people that are looking for this type of content. So if you enjoyed the episode, please do that. Thank you so much for listening to Restaurant Owners Uncorked or watching on YouTube. We appreciate you. We're proud to be able to do this. And we're just going to keep putting out great content, y'all. So stay tuned. Thank you.